Welcome to Fembolden, episode 2. I'm Stephanie Graff.
And I'm Kirsten Pope.
So last time we talked a lot about, you know, kind of just generally defining feminism, what it is, what it isn't, at least in our minds, and kind of how that's affected our lives. But we really wanted to dive in today on, you know, what does that look like socially in the lives of other people? And specifically, we wanted to bring up the topic of rape culture and consent, which I feel like is such a hot topic right now.
It's very timely, especially because the events that have transpired since our last podcast have been very poignant. So we thought this would be very appropriate, especially, you know, with Title IX changes and everything.
You know, like a new president and stuff.
And the new president, yeah. Well, I was just, like, trying to avoid that topic as much as possible.
Yeah, that minor issue.
Yeah. just kind of ignore it and move on. So we wanted to open our episode with kind of a unique story or a unique perspective of this area of rape culture. And I was talking to one of my really good friends yesterday, Stephanie Stolliger, who is brilliant and fabulous and knows way more things than I do about everything. And we were talking about Greek mythology, of all things, which I'm, as if anybody who knows me, like, I am not, I had to read the Iliad over the spring, and it was, like, torture for me. So, like, I'm glad she was there to tutor me on the subject. And she brought up this kind of feminist take on the story of Medusa. And so what happens to Medusa, just for those of you like me who don't know, and there's, like, other interpretations and translations and whatever, but Medusa was originally, like, this beautiful virgin maiden of Athena, and she was raped by Poseidon, the god, and Athena punishes Medusa by giving her her signature snake hair, and therefore banishing her to Africa, of all places. Interesting. And Medusa is then, like, exiled and isolated. But she is given the power to turn any man who looks at her to stone. Stephanie brought up this this Tumblr post that she saw, and I'm going to quote directly from it. And to give credit where credit is due, this is from Claudia Boleyn. And I'll link to this in our description for this new episode. But she says, "Medusa wasn't always a monster. She was once the beautiful virgin shadow maiden of Athena. Poseidon rapes Medusa in Athena's temple, and Athena punishes Medusa. What does this say about society then and now? As the original myth tells it, she lived in solitude because she did not wish to be around men after what Poseidon had done." You know, makes sense. "And Athena gave her the power to never be at the mercy of a male again. So originally, Athena was pissed at Poseidon, not Medusa. But yeah, renderings of Medusa's head appeared in the doorways of many women's shelters in ancient Greece because she was a symbol of female empowerment, not a monster feared by men and women alike." End quote.
Yeah. That's super interesting because, yeah, like, I mean, at least the limited mythology I have,
it's right,
she's this colloquial evil monster. You cut her snake hair off. But when you were reading that, I'm like, oh, girl, Medusa, like, I feel you.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
it's a tragedy if you look at it from her perspective. And obviously, like, we've taken some feminist, like, Claudia took some feminist liberties with this. And the whole women's shelter thing isn't really backed up by history at all. I mean, these were the Greeks, and they weren't all about, you know, protecting women and whatever. So, but yeah, just to look at this from the other perspective and just how that instance of her encounter with Poseidon changed the trajectory of her life in a very, very negative way, mm-hmm. and kind of cast her as this witch. But she, in some senses, was a victim. And
yeah,
depending on if you're a Greek or not.
Wow. No, I've never thought of the story that way. I mean, honestly, I didn't know the backstory, but I like the interpretation that you said, that Athena was mad at Poseidon, that it was actually, like, a blessing that she, you know, gave her the power to not be around men, to be in mm-hmm. solitude. And I think that's something that's hard, and obviously not the hardest thing, but, like, something that's hard and maybe not often talked about, like, at the heart of rape and, like, the discussion about rape and consent, is that one of the biggest and, you know, not super often talked about tragedies is that it really just can skew your perspective of all men, which I think is really hard, that, you know, one thing happened to you outside of your control, but that can just kind of leave a mental scar there. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, I'm sure it leaves a lot and, PTSD. But, like, in this sense, in, you know, not trusting men because, as we've mentioned before, we don't want to be – we are not man-haters. This is not a man-hating podcast. But I think for those that are and for those that do feel that way, it's just a bad case of, you know, one or a few people have just marred your perspective of, like, the entire –
of an entire gender, yeah. Mm-hmm. And yeah, absolutely. And the consequences are so of rape are so nuanced because, I mean, because the biology of yourself and your body is aroused. Like those are chemical and biological feelings of happiness, and yet in the circumstances and the context of when you're experiencing that, when you're raped or assaulted, is something very evil and vile and violating and. And that confliction just messes you up psychologically, that you hated the experience and you wish it never happened to you, and yet you had those feelings and you also have kind of your social background, especially if you're Mormon, being told that you're used goods or whatever.
Cupcake lessons.
Yeah. I mean, those who have listened to Elizabeth Smart recently know what we're talking about. to quote SpongeBob, used napkin, you know.
yes.
Which you absolutely are not, and but you just have all of these conflicting things happening.
Yeah. And I mean, just like a side note, I mean, I don't think, obviously, I'm now delving outside the realm of my own experience, but when you're raped, you don't have those, like, sexual arousal feelings, but it's the actual experience of, like, being violated like that that can, you know, mar future sexual experience. So as far as, like, rape culture goes, we obviously wanted to bring up a very recent and classic example of...
To light the fires,
Brock Turner.
Oh, Brock Turner.
And I actually had a retweeted something the other day that, like, I actually really loved. It was, girls can bond over three things: bashing on ex-boyfriends, shopping, and hating Brock Turner.
Yep.
And it's so true.
I agree with that.
It's such a part of our culture now.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah, so this is what makes, and this is what we really want to talk about, is that you have this traumatic experience, but it's in this cultural context that kind of lends toward the perpetrator. And in the case of Brock Turner, there's so many things that are irritating. But, I mean, just like victim blaming, and that he was always... you know, looked at this martyr because he was, you know, this...
an athlete.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. And plus his, like, unfairly short sentence and the letter from his dad about, you know, the, like, what was it, like, 5 minutes of action or whatever he said.
Like, I don't... a poor unconscious girl behind a dumpster.
Yeah, like...
your whole family's sick.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. But that happens, and it happens, I think... maybe not to that degree, but it happens more often than people would think. After watching The Hunting Ground on Netflix, 10 out of 10 recommend. That will light the fire, if anything else.
Never go jogging after dark.
No. But this is the world we live in. And, like, why do we have to deal with this?
Yeah. And, I mean, I think the hard thing for me is it wasn't just men. I mean, especially, like, right after the Brock Turner thing, it wasn't just men, but some women on Twitter were like, well, I mean, she was drunk at a party. And, like, and I'm like, so that's an invitation to other people. Like, and this is going to start, you know, bleeding over into our conversation about consent, but nothing about what I do non-verbally is an invitation for you.
Absolutely.
To touch me in any way. And, like, the fact that I can't wear certain things or I can't do certain things because some people take it as, like, an unwritten invitation or that then I'm somehow revoking my will is just, like, so degrading.
Yes. That, like, as soon as I put on a piece of clothing, I, like, lose my right to choice. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely, it's idiotic. And maybe that's, you know, strong for people who actually feel that way. But, and we do need to make the concession that, like, obviously the people who commit rape and perpetrate sexual assaults are a small percentage of the gender as a whole. Like, obviously, we're not saying that all men out there are raping women senselessly, which is not true. But it's still there. And the attitudes and the feelings are still there. Just that feeling that you are responsible for what people do to you outside mm-hmm. of your own choice is,
I know,
is ludicrous.
Is ludicrous. And so I really have, I mean, obviously the Brock Turner story, like, it's a tragedy, it's terrible, but I feel like it has really brought this issue to the surface.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, I mean, here at BYU, they had to do a major, which I really love, they did a major study into how BYU handles mm-hmm. sexual assault, and there were some serious, serious problems. But a lot of it was based in this culture of victim blaming, that, you know, you get raped or you're a victim of sexual assault and you go to the honor code office
right.
to see if you had sex. And, like, honestly, that's not the issue. If someone has been raped, like, that's not our first area of concern is, mm-hmm. did you break the honor code?
Right. I mean, because they broke the honor code, too. I mean, like,
yeah.
And never mind the honor code. Like, what?
How about the law?
Exactly. Exactly. Like, how could, those are mm-hmm. apples and oranges. And
but, I mean, the problem is that, like, that was the base assumption it was laying in. It's like, well, what if she actually did and she's just lying? And, like, what if she
like,
had like, what if she had consensual sex and she's just lying
you
to
mean,
say
like, false accusations?
Yeah, so she doesn't get kicked out of BYU.
Yeah.
Like, that's what the assumptions that it was
right.
based in.
And that's one of the most pervasive things as far as criminal justice and law enforcement goes, is that this assumption that the woman is lying to get attention or whatever. And I actually mm-hmm. looked into that in researching this, and it's the FBI estimated it's between 2-5% of our unfounded claims. And unfounded could mean many things, including false accusations, but also including things that cannot be proved, like hearsay. So it's a very small percent. And it depends on what study you look at and from what source. But
yeah.
it's a very small percentage. And what's more important is that the percentage is no different than, like, any other, like, domestic violence or other crimes of a similar nature. Or that can be compared in that way.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the underlying thing is this distrust or assumption that man is in the right and woman is in the wrong. Woman is the adulteress, and which I feel like is a strong underlying current
mm-hmm.
of society that's existed for a long time.
And then, I mean, I guess, just also playing devil's advocate here, I was actually having a similar conversation to this with one of my good friends the other day, and he said, just talking about this culture, this rape culture, consent, he said almost he feels like we're in a culture now where people are more likely to believe women when they say they've been raped because this has been brought
up
to the
surface.
That's
true. That's true.
And so the issue he brought up is he said, you know, if a woman's been raped, obviously go report it. Like, that's a serious issue. But at the same time, it needs to be very, like, it has to be rape. Because he said, you know, having that, like, on your record that, like, you were sexually assaulted, like,
right.
he said that will ruin you.
Yeah, and on the flip side, I am not a supporter of the sex offender registry at all.
Mm.
I mean, I feel like it should be a tool for law enforcement, but it should not be public record. My personal opinion, it should not be public record. In Utah, sex offenders on the list have to give, like, their Facebook password and all their social media password except for, like, their bank account.
To the police.
To the government.
Oh.
And that's not public record, but it's accessed by the police. And I don't know. I mean, that's kind of the other side, like, to the swing of this issue is like, well, this is such a big problem, so, like, we should do this reactionary thing. That's a good point to bring up, is that it's damaging to people who are innocent or who, yeah, may not have done such a vicious crime as is supposed.
Yeah. So, okay. So talking about, you know, this issue of, you know, the balance, men and women, like, was it rape, was it not? This is consent. And this is what I feel mm-hmm. like this whole debate nationally has brought up, is
yeah.
consent. And I was in I was at school the other day, and they had this big screen for digital signage in the business building, and it just, like, was white background, red letters that just said, "Can I kiss you?" Which was so timely because I had just gotten into, like, a Twitter discussion about consent. So if at Queen Morgana or at Kylie in the Sky are listening to this, you're both aware that this is you.
You know who you are.
So they were in a conversation on Twitter, or I think one of them had, like, created a poll about consent. Like, to have full consent, do you want a guy to ask if he can kiss you before he kisses you? And then people voted, blah, 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 and, like, gave their responses. But I think it was, like, 60-40 or 70-30. But the majority said, no, like, that's awkward and I don't want that. Mm-hmm. So then this Twitter conversation ensued. And if there's one thing I'm good at, it's butting myself into other people's Twitter conversations and then just, like, bailing.
Deuces.
So I, of course, do that. And then it actually, we just move it to a direct message because I don't know, like, it's such a nuanced, weird thing. So my opinion was, I don't want a guy asking me if he can kiss me. Maybe I did. Maybe I thought that was cute when I was, like, 16. And now I'm like, dude, just, ugh. Like, what a mood killer, you know?
Yeah. But what if it's in a circumstance where, like, you weren't expecting it? Because I feel like in that assumption, you're, like, assuming that it'll be in a context where it's, like,
romantic.
Natural. Yeah. But what if it's, like, a first date and you didn't think it
and
went well?
Like, no.
And you were just, like, it was just, like, really short and you're just, like, whatever. But then he, like, goes in.
And you're like, no.
Yeah, like, what about that?
So I was talking to my coworkers about this because I'm very lucky to live in a very feminist office, which is great. But so one of my coworkers told a story that, like, she was on a date one time and, like, wasn't super into him. The guy was kind of, like, skeevy and weird. And he leans over, literally pulls her seat, like, pulls the lever that, like, pushes her seat back, takes her seatbelt off, and, like, jumps, like, and just, like, kisses her. And she's just like, what?
Gosh.
No. And so, and granted, my opinion on this, I fully acknowledge that it does put more of the burden on men.
Mm, yeah. But, so, is that feminist of us to have that system?
I mean, this is just me. This is Steph Graf's opinion of consent.
Okay.
That there are other ways to have consent besides having to say, "Can I kiss you?" There's actually, like, a really funny New Girl episode about this. And, like, all of the friends are together talking about the first time they had sex. And Jess is like, "Oh, mine was so consensual and so respectful." And it just, like, it, like, flashes back to it. And it's so awkward. He's like, "Can I take your shirt off?" "Why, yes, you may." And, like, maybe it's just, like, that's what I picture when I picture a guy saying, like, "Can I kiss you?" It's just, like, robotic and weird and gross. And I'm sure there are some guys.
"May I put my face on your face?"
Yeah, I'm sure there are some guys that can do it great. I'm sure there are some situations that it's adorable. But, again, this is my own opinion.
Right.
That there are ways to have consent without having to say that.
But the implications of that, it could be conceived as a double standard that, like, oh, like, you don't, like, just circumstances and context will allow you to kiss somebody. But, I mean, if you take that, like, where do you draw the line? Because, like, do you need that for a makeout? Do you need that for, like, other things down the line? Because I think we can both agree that context and not saying anything, body language
doesn't
signal consent if you're having sex.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean,
so, like, where do you draw the line? And
I think,
and
maybe
people might draw the line differently.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it does need to be verbal, but not asking, "Can I kiss you?" And, like, you brought up an interesting point. Do you always need consent? If I'm married, does my husband need to?
That's a good question.
Because
spousal rape is a thing.
It is a thing. Does he need to check that? And I'm sure, like, if I'm married, obviously the lines of open communication are
a little
more open,
yeah,
than some guy I'm on a date with. But you're totally right. Like, spousal rape is such a thing. And so is there ever an end to consent when you're in a committed relationship?
Right. I feel like there should be some signal of affirmation on each side. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's an assumed, like, you have an understanding, like, this is my assumed signal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's your personal, like, your in your relationship, your personal thing. But I just, it gives, having that affirmation gives you a sense of control in the situation, mm-hmm. gives you a sense of the mutuality of what you're doing.
Yeah.
That it's not someone doing something to you, you're doing something together.
Because honestly, I mean, rape or not, sexual or not, like having someone do something, having that feeling that someone is just doing something to you, I mean, that is objectification at
yeah.
the core. And
yeah.
there is
in
almost
any circumstance.
Nothing that feels worse mm-hmm. or like more degrading.
Yeah. It's and someone using you as a means, using you as an object,
mm-hmm.
as a
to
tool.
Get what they want.
Exactly.
And I mean, I think a lot of women have felt this way. I mean, I wouldn't say
I've felt it before
yeah.
on dates. I mean, even if it doesn't have anything to do with physical intimacy, like you know, like
when you're just like a prop.
Yes.
And yeah, no, it's
like
terrible.
One time I went on this was in high school, but I went on this date and this kid was just like bagging on his ex-girlfriend the whole time. And I quickly realized that my whole purpose in being on that date. And I was kind of surprised that he asked me anyway, because we were kind of friends. Like, we were in this, a couple of classes, but we didn't hang out.
Yeah.
And so I thought this was like, oh, he's like interested in me. But I quickly found out on the date that my purpose in being there was so he could get back at his ex.
Ugh.
And I was livid the entire time. Like, I was just as sassy as I could be, because I just.
That's horrible.
I felt. Like,
I'm a complex human being, and I need to be treated like a complex human being.
Yeah.
Never just reduced to, like, an ex-girlfriend buffer.
Right.
Or,
exactly.
like, oh, I just, like, am here to make out and then leave. You could be anything or anyone.
Yeah.
When, because I think universally, and I don't have any hesitation in saying this, everybody wants to be seen and heard and understood for what they are or
exactly.
what they think they are.
Exactly.
And
validated.
Validated. And having that taken away from you to be, essentially, without saying, you are just here to serve one purpose is extremely, extremely degrading.
Absolutely.
So getting back to consent,
right.
and, you know, how we achieve this.
Yeah.
Because I think you brought up a good point, is this, you know, consent thing doesn't just apply to a makeout or sex. Like, everything needs to be consensual. But how you do that in a non-awkward way, that's where the challenge
yeah,
comes.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
honestly where the challenge
How
comes.
How can you not be awkward?
Yeah.
I'm probably not the expert in this.
I'm never the expert at not being awkward, because I'm super awkward. And, like, I think it's easier when you are in a committed relationship. Like, I know, like,
right.
maybe this is a little too much information, but
I mean, at this point.
I remember, like, I was in a relationship one time. Actually, I think I've done this in a couple of relationships I've been in, where there's, like, literally a physical signal, like an ear pull or, like,
right.
a, like, two arm taps that's just, like, I'm done. Like, I'm kissing you, but I'm done now.
Yeah.
Or
your
no,
safe
or,
word.
Yeah, it's, like, a safe word. And, like, obviously, that always needs to be, like, abided by. Like, mm-hmm. the second.
Yes.
But I think
that's another thing on the other side, like consent to initiate, but also
consent to stop.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
that's where I think most problems
consent
arise.
Not like consent to stop, meaning that when you say stop, stop.
Stop means stop.
Yeah, exactly.
And because I think a lot of rape cases, that's the debate is, oh, well, she was down to like make out with me.
Exactly.
So then exactly. I just assumed, but she was like, no, I didn't want to have sex with you. And so
right.
we don't have that much, like, that's not as pervasive where we are, but.
Well, I would disagree with that.
Yeah, no, it's, I agree.
I would
okay.
wholeheartedly disagree with that.
Granted.
That the typical, what I think the rape or the sexual assault that most affects people is not the Brock Turner example behind mm-hmm. the alley, drunk, half naked.
It's someone that
like,
you.
It's someone you already trust. It's someone you've been with before, and they go too far and they don't respect your limits.
Mm-hmm. Limits.
Exactly.
That is the.
And before you know it, you're doing something you don't want to do, and no matter how hard you try, they do not stop.
And that's where the guilt comes in. It's like, well,
exactly.
I was down
exactly.
20 minutes ago, but like I am done now.
I think this is the sexual assault of today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's less like people jumping out at you, although that still happens. But it's that like I was down for
or
steps
I guess
ABC, but like
assault.
I don't. I'm done now. But at that point,
yeah.
And I think that's honestly,
or you give up trying to say no so many times,
yeah.
And you do have these guilt complexes because there's another person involved, and And you don't realize till after the fact that,
yes.
that you don't realize till after the fact that they were in complete fault.
And that's, I mean, just even in like my limited past experience, that is where the guilt comes in. And the guilt is so bad. It's like, well, is that my fault? Because
especially in a Mormon culture where you're taught to suppress mm-hmm. everything.
And slut shaming is so pervasive.
Yes. Oh my gosh. We're going to get to that.
We can have
we're going to get to that later, y'all.
We will have a whole podcast on slut shaming. But
I'm sure you are all highly requesting it at this point.
I am.
If anybody is, we are.
Yes. So we're almost out of time, but I guess to wrap this up, at the heart of consent, which is at the heart of rape culture, is communication.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it works to say, can I kiss you? Are you down for this? Or whatever it is, whether it's like a nonverbal signal that you both agreed upon, everything needs to be consensual, not just sex, not just makeouts, but it's respect.
Yeah, and I think that's the underlying principle behind consent is that whatever you do should be done in togetherness and done in mutuality. And if it's ever one-sided or if anybody at some point loses control, it becomes dangerous. And so you can argue about, you know, the behavior and the convention of, you know, when do I ask, like how do I ask, like whatever. But as long as you're achieving that underlying principle, I feel like you're good. As long as you understand that in your mind and in practice, then you're headed in the right direction. I mean,
we're all stumbling around.
This is dating. Like,
nobody knows what they're doing.
Nobody knows what's going on at all times.
Yeah. But, like, with that respect, like, if you really have that core attitude of respect, I think you're going to have a lot.
You'll be more successful.
Yeah.
And there'll be less of that guilt and shame. And mm-hmm. you will be inflicting less of that on your partner, which is
the goal.
Is, from a feminist standpoint, what we want.
Yeah.
And again, like, this is. Like, rape also affects men. We're not saying that this isn't limited to women. And from a feminist and gender equality standpoint, we have to acknowledge that. And we have to acknowledge that rape culture affects men almost more so because it's seen as not as common or not as acceptable. Lose your masculinity. Like, there's a whole
different culture of
shame.
But
feminism as a movement in helping to overcome rape culture will also alleviate and come out and bring out of the shadows that symptom and how it affects men.
Yeah, because it's not just men need to respect women over and over. It's that we all need to respect each other.
Right.
That is gender equality.
Exactly.
Is that we
should all be accountable and assume culpability for our actions. I was just, sorry to add one more thing. I was in researching this. I saw an interesting article from it's an acronym RAIN. I don't know what it stands for, but it's like it's a rape victims like network thing.
Yeah.
I wish I knew the acronym, but
someone can let us know.
Yeah. They I'll look it up later. But they were saying that to be cautious with this idea of rape culture because it puts the culpability on the culture and not the culpability on the individual.
That's so interesting.
And so I was like, what? Like,
I've had a guy say that to me before. It's like, well, I'm sorry, but like, society just made me this way.
Yeah, and that
I'm
is
like, you are
dangerous.
Not the victim here.
Yes. And so what we're saying here is culpability always lies with the individual. It's mm-hmm. always an individual's choice to do something as evil as rape.
Yeah. Or any consensual.
Yeah. Beyond that. But rape culture is a societal normalization of those different elements that we've mm-hmm. talked about, like victim blaming and media portrayals of the guilty, you know, the poor rector, you know, this poor little swimmer who, you know, refusal of institutions to enforce and take seriously victims. And we're grateful for BYU's steps towards doing that, although it needs to be proved how effective this will be. And just the skepticism towards women that they're doing something wrong and they brought it upon themselves. So all these elements kind of reinforce those attitudes, but the culpability always lies and ultimately lies with the individual.
Yeah, whether they be men or women.
Exactly.
Amen, amen, amen.
And that is gender equality and that is feminism.
So we know that this episode was pretty heavy.
Yeah, we're
so
sorry about that.
If you're still listening,
well, sorry, not sorry.
Sorry, not sorry. I loved it. I mean, I love everything.
We enjoyed everything we were saying.
So next week, we are going to start bringing on our guest speakers.
Our first guest speaker. Yay.
Yay. More voices.
Yay.
So I am actually really, really excited. We are, without revealing too much, because this is also going to be kind of new territory for us.
Right.
We are going to be speaking with a member of a BYU club, BYU society, though I'm actually not sure if it's officially BYU endorsed.
Probably not.
I should check on
BYU.
That. But yeah, they have interesting stances about, you know, the intersection of religion and the intersection of, you know, secular forces, including sexuality,
yeah.
and how those two intersect. So we're having a representative from their club come and talk to
us. He's a man, just for the record.
Yeah, he is a man, so we're going to get a male perspective.
Right.
So stay tuned.
Yay.
I'm very excited for that. Next week, we are going to, our episode with my friend Chad, it's going to be about sexuality, healthy sexuality, mm-hmm. healthy sexual attitudes.
Implications of, like, the modesty.
Yes. And
rhetoric.
We will bring in a little bit of that slut shaming.
Yes, and yes.
We'll have some direct text messages and Insta posts to share with you.
Wow. Looking forward to it.
I'm very much looking forward to it.
Absolutely. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. We appreciate it. We appreciate the validation for our own personal beliefs. When our first episode went out, my roommates were listening to it and, like, giving me, like, their play-by-play reactions of it. And I don't know. It just makes you feel like what you're doing is, you know, actually worth something.
There are people that actually believe the same way you
right.
do.
Right. It's validating. So we appreciate that very much.
And we will see you next week. This is Ben Bolden.